Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
They will not control us. We will be victorious. So come on!
Hello, everyone. How you doing today?
We got into that one.
You are watching / listening to the Command Zone podcast. Yes, because we love Muse. We both agree they're a great band. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai. Yeah, my deck got Aretha Franklin. Yeah, she's pretty sweet, actually.
She is pretty sweet. Yeah. So, respect.
Yeah.
So we're back with another deck tech for an upcoming Game Nights episode that's coming out January 25th. Last time we talked about Rakdos with the Scourge Diva. What's her name
Judith.
Again? Judith, that's right. Yeah. Sorry, Judith. Sorry, I shouldn't forget her name. And we're doing something a little different. We're doing the deck techs before the episode comes out. Let us know what you guys think about it in the comments. I actually like this because you get to see spoilers and people start making decks around before the sets come out.
So, yeah, it always felt before like we were talking about a deck, but it was like a month after everybody's seen the card because we had to wait till Game Nights came out and then talk about it. I also think like watching the episode and knowing like what each deck's trying to do, or we're not going to be able to do all the decks before the episode comes out because it's coming out on January 25th.
Yeah.
But at least you'll know what a couple of the decks are trying to do. And, you know, obviously we do a quick deck breakdown in the Game Nights episode, but it's like 90 seconds.
Yeah.
So if you want, you know, more like an hour, well, here you are.
Yeah, that's right. And I decided to do something a little bit different with the Lavinia deck tech today. We're going to talk about the deck as it appears on the show and its current form, as well as two adjacent ways that you might want to take it. And we'll talk about exactly why I did that in a bit. But before we get there, a lot of cards we're going to be talking about today, a lot of different ways to build this deck that satisfy, I believe, all kinds of players. You should head on over to cardkingdom.com/commandzone. That's our affiliate link. You're going to be buying cards anyway. Why not now suit them up with the perfect cards to add from Card Kingdom with fast shipping, great customer service. We shared a really nice story last week about them, and they do live up to that name.
Yeah, they have great customer service. And speaking of suiting up your deck, you know, you might want to suit it up, if it's Lavinia, in Azorius sleeves.
Or the Azorius deck box.
Oh, yeah, or with the Azorius deck box or the Hallowed Fountain playmat. They have that so that all your stuff is matching. Ultra Pro really does make the best product in the business that is going to protect your stuff. And it's really important that you have good card sleeves because, you know, you might have an expensive card or two in the deck and you don't want anything to happen to it. So Ultra Pro always killing it, always making higher and higher quality things.
This is so cool, man. I'm glad I can always keep my Azorius deck in the Azorius deck box.
It also makes it easier when you're like, with you don't have to open each deck to like look at it. You're like, that's the Lavinia one, that's the Judith one,
right.
This is the Taysa one. You can just look at it from the outside of the box. So the last way to support all of our content is directly if you go to patreon.com/commandzone. You can contribute right to us for Game Nights, Extra Turns, this podcast. Also, at a certain level, you get access to the Discord server, which is like a chat server. Jimmy and I are hanging out on all the time. It's fun to chat with all of our patrons and answer questions or just brew decks.
Cards.
That's a lot of fun. And I've had the Discord help me with some of the stuff we've talked about on the episodes as far as like talking about cards and cards people think are good or
they
they're excited about.
They help me with this deck as well.
Yeah. So if you want to be a part of that entire community, patreon.com/commandzone. And one other thing that patrons get is we call out one lucky patron every single episode, and this episode is dedicated to
Ferdinand Baumgarten. What happened to your contribution?
I was going to say Fernando, and then I was like, realized I was wrong. Sorry, Ferdinand. Ferdinand Baumgarten. I will say that by myself rather than in unison because I messed it up. I want to say Fernando.
Ferdinand, you rock.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow. That's the first time I haven't said it. Ferdinand, you rock.
Ah, there you go.
Jimmy beat me to it.
Ferdinand actually switched his pledge from $1 to $2, which means that he has access to the Discord. And this month, I think we're going to be doing a little community thing where we're going to decide the best songs that fit each guild.
Oh.
Yeah, so like across the history of music, like what is the Rakdos song, you know?
So clearly that is Aretha Franklin's R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
I think we're more in the hard rock / maybe death metal kind of thing, you know what I
mean? Is Azorius, it can't be Uprising by Muse because in general the Azorius are not rebellious. It's just Lavinia that is, right?
At this point, I would believe so.
Okay.
All right, so let's move on to the deck tech. Today we are talking about Lavinia Azorius Renegade. She's blue-white, a legendary creature human soldier 2-2. Each opponent can't cast non-creature spells with converted mana cost greater than the number of lands that player controls. And whenever an opponent casts a spell, if no mana was spent to cast it, counter that spell. So she doesn't seem amazing for EDH, all things considered, but she does actually have a lot of ways that slow people down, I think, in actually pretty effective ways, which is if someone's ramping out crazy and they're going to cast big non-creature spells, you can stop them.
Yeah. She definitely does hose certain decks, too, just incidentally.
Yeah.
Narsets, Jalevas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Stops all zero casting cost things, so like packs of whatever, Mana Crypt.
Yeah.
Obviously, they probably cast their Mana Crypt before Lavinia came out. But at the same time, Mana Crypt's giving you two extra mana, but you can't really cast a 5-drop on turn 3 with a Mana Crypt if Lavinia's out.
Yeah.
Unless it's a creature spell.
And the thing about this deck for me is I felt that it was actually really hard to get creative in the way that I built it, because a lot of blue-white is just kind of lends itself, and this deck and this commander lends itself to a very specific thing, which is stop people from doing stuff.
Yeah, that's the thing. There's a lot of synergy with Lavinia, but a lot of it's kind of mean, or
yeah.
really mean, like the knowledge pool thing.
Yeah.
That's just like no one can cast spells. Like it's not something everybody wants to do.
Right. So I wanted to do something that was still powerful, still fun to pilot, but also wouldn't be, you know, and we talked about this, like, I guess politically, people really don't like full lockdown stasis decks because it kind of stops people. It doesn't really give other players a chance sometimes.
Right.
And that is sort of one of the things I ran up against while making this deck. So that's why we're going to talk about other ways to build it that I think could be fun if you wanted to build around a commander like this, but without making people potentially making things a little dicey at the table.
Yeah, because if you do the full-on stacks, and you went a little bit, but not full-on.
Mm-hmm.
But if you went full-on stacks, which I think is probably the most powerful way to build Lavinia, you might win a game or two with that deck, but pretty soon you're going to be emailing us, and you're going to be asking the famous question, why is my playgroup killing me first every single game?
Why do they not want to play with me anymore?
Yeah, well, that's probably because you played that Lavinia deck too much.
But the strategy and goal of this deck is to establish comfort and safety, make sure you're safe and you're good to go. Establish a grip in your hand, a bunch of cards you can win with, and take it all down at once. Because if anything, the worst part about stacks is being like, it's stacks time, 10 turns later. Is it still stacks time?
Yeah. How are you going to win? I'll figure something
out. Yeah, we'll get there. I got to draw into my win con. No, I'd rather get that ready and then do it very quickly so that it's not too much of a pain for everyone else. But to do that, it means you're going to need some elements of stacks. And, here we go.
The greatest art in all of Magic.
Yeah. It's almost like it came from Amon Kett, you know, like this guy over here.
It is. I think it's one of the best arts of all time.
Stasis. One in the blue for an enchantment. Players do not get an untap phase, and it has a upkeep cost of blue. Otherwise, you destroy Stasis.
Which was supposed to sort of keep it in check, because if no one's untapping, eventually you can't pay the blue.
Right.
I mean, obviously, you can play lands, and they come into play untapped.
Mm-hmm.
Which can keep stasis alive for a while. But there are various ways, of course, to keep stasis alive forever. But often you don't need to just keep it up indefinitely. You just get into a good position, lock everybody down for two or three turns, and that lets you...
And that's all you need, yeah.
Especially in a deck that's saying, like, it's harder, it's already difficult for you to cast things.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now you have no untap step, so you don't get any new mana.
Sorry, guys. So stasis is probably the roughest card to get down early in this deck by far. Because it is the only thing that really says... You don't get a one tap.
Not to jump ahead, but there's a new card from Ravnica Allegiance that you did put in the deck that mm-hmm. combos very, very well with Stasis.
Yes.
So it's Smothering Tithe, and we talked about this on our set review. If you can get Smothering Tithe out, because it is a card that's 3 and a white, and it says, whenever an opponent draws a card, that player may pay 2 mana. If they don't, you create a treasure token artifact that says tap and sack it, to add 1 mana of any color. So if you get this out and then cast Stasis, well, then it comes to my turn. I draw a card. I wasn't able to untap, so I have no mana to pay. So Jimmy gets a treasure token. Well, the treasure token can pay the upkeep on Stasis.
Yep.
And you're going to gain a couple extra treasure from the other players mm-hmm. on each turn, and that's the kind of thing that with Stasis just makes it like nearly impossible to break out of.
Yeah, not fun.
Yeah. But it's powerful, super powerful. Another one, and these next two cards are very similar. Can I just read them at the same time?
Yeah, I feel like these are JLK favorites, by the way.
Yeah, so Blind Obedience and Frozen Aether. Blind Obedience is 1 and a white for an enchantment. Frozen Aether is 3 and a blue for an enchantment. They basically make your opponent's stuff come into play tapped. So Frozen Aether is artifacts, creatures, and lands from your opponents come into play tapped. With Stasis out, it's brutal. But it's surprisingly brutal just by itself.
By itself, yeah.
Lands coming into play tapped is pretty brutal. There, you make all of your opponent's lands into guild gates, kind of, which is not great because they're just playing a turn behind you the whole game. And then Blind Obedience is only artifacts and creatures your opponents control enter the battlefield tapped, but it also has extort, so all of the spells you cast, you can pay a white, in this case only a white, but a white or a black, in addition to the cost of the spell, basically, and you drain everybody for one. Everybody takes one damage, and you gain
that much life.
I want to make a rules thing, because we always get this when we talk about extort. Yeah. Okay, extort has the hybrid black-white mana symbol in its reminder text. I know a lot of people, they go, you can't play that unless you have black and white in your deck. That's not true, because extort is the exception to the rule, because reminder text does not add to the color identity of the card. It's reminder text. Yeah. Rules text does. So the hybrid mana symbol in extort, the mechanic extort, doesn't change the color identity of the card. It doesn't affect it. So in this case, Blind Obedience is a mono white card.
Yeah. Now, if it said extort colon and it said you may pay a hybrid mana every time a card enters the battlefield, if you do this effect, then it would be considered a black white card.
I know it's confusing. Just take our word for it. Extort is not part of color identity.
Yeah. So if it's a white card with extort on it, you can play it in a white deck.
Yep.
Another reason I like Frozen Aether is it kind of resets the turn order.
Yeah.
It lets you be the first player in a lot of ways, which is really powerful.
And what we learned, the first player actually has like a 6% better chance to win the game. So if you can steal turn one, you just increase your win percentage by a lot.
I'll take those odds. Next up, we got Grand Arbiter Augustin the Fourth. 2W and a BW for a 2/3 legendary creature human advisor. This card is nuts.
It was on our most hated commander list for DJ and I, for sure. Yeah. It's not the commander in this case. It's still one of my most hated in the 99 cards,
It's absurd. So for you, the person that casts it, white spells and blue spells you cast cost one less to cast. So if it's a white and a blue spell,
all your spells
cost two less. Yeah. Ugh. And spells your opponent cast cost one more to cast. So all spells. It's just very powerful. It very quickly turns into, you know, this combined with a Frozen Aether or a Blind Obedience means now that they're two turns behind. And that's sort of what I mean by setting up a safety net, is you need to make sure that you are far enough ahead that if everyone turns on you at the same time, you still are able to get out of it.
I mean, you just you put your opponents into molasses. They're just moving so slow, right? And with Lavinia, it becomes a headache to cast stuff, because you can't cast non-creature spells that cost more than the amount of lands you have in play.
Yeah, if you're trying
and then
to cheat
everything
stuff out.
You're casting costs one more. I do want to say that Lavinia cares about the CMC of the spell, so the additional one mana from Grand Arbiter won't
affect it.
So, like, let's say you have let's say you have five lands in play and a Signet, and you go to play a five drop. Grand Arbiter's out, so it costs six. Lavinia still allows it.
Yeah, because you're looking for five. Well, five drop in terms of a non-creature spell.
Right.
Yeah. Whoa! Nice.
See, that it's because it hit me.
That one hit me.
All right.
Another way you have to be safe is in combat. So we have cards that we've talked a lot about here. Magus of the Moat. It's the realistic way to play Moat in Commander.
Unless you have $600 or whatever.
Two white for a 0/3 human wizard. Creatures without flying can't attack.
Can't attack anybody.
Can't attack. Just can't do anything. Obviously, you have some flyers in this deck as well. But just a good card to just make sure you're not being run over by a million tokens or whatever else it is.
Speaking of tokens.
Yes.
These next two cards work good against them.
Propaganda and Ghostly Prison. I don't think there may be no two cards we've talked about more on the show except for Vedalken Orrery, other than these two here.
Prophet of Crucifix in the day.
Yeah, in the good old days. both of these cost two and then either white or blue, and they basically tax your opponent for trying to attack you. Creatures can't attack you unless the controller plays two for each creature he or she controls that's attacking you. So it makes it very hard for people to attack you. If you're already slowly choking their mana in some small way, Lavinia's already out. You know, it's not the full stasis lockdown. It's not brutal. People can still play. You're just setting them a slightly further behind so that you can establish your comfort on the table before taking decisive action.
It also often makes your opponent attack a different opponent than you. And a lot of players are like, well, once you've hit somebody, it's better to keep hitting the same person rather than make another person mad at you.
Right.
So it can just be enough deflection. They're very powerful cards.
Yeah.
The last one is Platinum Angel. 7 mana for a 4/4 flyer. It says you can't lose the game and your opponents can't win the game. So basically, until they kill this thing,
you could be at negative a billion life, or I guess zero life, and you still wouldn't die.
Yeah.
I thought that was just another interesting... That's sort of one of my flex cards. I've never really gotten to play it much in Commander, so I wanted to see how it worked. Finally, the last category for safety would be the counterspell category. And you know, I like counterspells. I've seen them win so many games.
This next one is gone up and up. I'm glad you included it because I am including it more and more these days.
Yeah. I was going to say, though, because I love counterspells, but I also don't love always having to play just counterspells.
Right.
So Insidious Will is one of those cards that lets you get a lot of flexibility out of something. 2 blue-blue, and it's an instant. You can choose one, counter target spell, or you may choose new targets for target spell, or copy target instant or sorcery spell. You may choose new targets for the copy. So I'm going to take that Electro Dominance and redo it myself.
You can fork it, you can steal it, or you can just counter it.
Yeah, and this is like three cards that in the past was like, man, do I play Misdirection in my deck? Probably not. And Insidious Will does all of that and also leaves you with the ability to counter just a straight-up spell if you need it. So you get a ton of flexibility with it. It's never a feel-bad in your hand. You feel like you're in control when you have something like this.
This next one, are you playing it just to like laugh in people's faces because when Lavinia's out, they can't play this card?
Maybe.
It's Pact of Negation. It's 0 mana for an instant. It says counter target spell. At the beginning of your next upkeep, pay 3 blue-blue. If you don't, you lose the game. So again, with Lavinia out, your opponents can't cast spells if they didn't pay mana for it.
Mm-hmm.
You can, though.
Yeah,
so Pact of Negation for 0 is good. And then, you know, don't forget to pay the upkeep. Otherwise, you lose. Unless Platinum Angel's out.
Yeah, and honestly, any time... Yeah, that's actually really funny. Any Pact of Negation, Platinum Angel, pass. Anytime you are able to cast something for 0 mana, it's incredibly powerful. Because that's the thing. People are going to be looking for openings. Like, okay, finally, he's tapped out. He's weak. Let's do something. And if you have Pact of Negation or a Force of Will type effect, you are good to go.
Yep.
Or if you just leave up only white mana and cast Teferi's Protection. 2 and a white, instant. Until your next turn, your life total can't change, and you have protection from everything. All permanents you control phase out, and then you exile the spell. So phasing means that all your permanents are treated like they don't exist, and then they phase in before your next untap step.
Yeah.
I put this in the counterspell category because technically it can counter a spell if
that's true. Targeting
like you or something. Yeah, you'd be like, nope, see ya. Nice thing is it still affects everyone else.
Yeah.
So the card has just gone up and up and up in my book. It's really powerful.
It's been played on game nights on the Guilds of Ravnica episode, actually. We did a whole thing. There was a complicated stack and Teferi's Protection factored pretty heavily into it.
Okay, the next category is Get the Grip. When I say grip, it means your hand. I don't know if that's a grip of cards,
yeah.
Right? So this is how to set stuff up. Smothering Tithe.
This is my favorite category, by the way, because you're drawing a lot of cards.
Yeah, it's true. Smothering Tithe was a card that we have from the upcoming set. So is Precognitive Perception. 3 blue-blue for an instant, and you can draw 3 cards. However, if you cast this spell during your main phase, you instead scry 3, then draw 3 cards. So again, a flexible card draw spell. I wanted to try to put some cards from Ravnica Allegiance in there, and when you, again, are putting people so far behind, sometimes you will have the freedom to addendum a card and not have to worry about, I have to cast it on someone's end step. And hey, if you have enough mana, maybe you can go off with those cards this turn, too.
Scry 3, draw 3 is way better than just draw 3.
Yeah.
So if you can pull that off, you want to. That's like dig through time, almost. You're going to get 6 cards deep.
Yeah, you get to look at a lot of stuff and decide what you want.
Yeah, pretty cool. The next one is Tamio, the Moon Sage. 3 blue-blue for a 4-mana Planeswalker Tamios +1, tap target permanent. It doesn't untap during its controller's next untap step. So it's removal.
Mm-hmm.
The next one is -2, draw a card for each tapped creature target player controls. Pretty good with Blind Obedience and those things, or Stasis.
Or if someone's just trying to kill you and you don't, you know, they're just tapping all their stuff.
Yeah. And then her -8 is you get an emblem with you have no maximum hand size, and whenever a card is put into your graveyard from anywhere, you may return it to your hand. The one thing I'll say about ultimates in a deck that has Stasis and things like that in it is that your chance of getting there are a lot higher.
Yeah.
Because Stasis stops an untap step, but it doesn't stop Planeswalkers because they don't care about tapping and untapping, so they still get to activate every turn. So Stasis with Planeswalker is very powerful. Also just Grand Arbiter and Planeswalkers, because slowing down your opponents and making it so it's hard for them to affect your stuff tends to make Planeswalkers a little bit better. So
Yeah. next up, a combination of 2 cards. Basically, 1 card can cast the other card.
Yeah.
The card that it's casting is Sphinx's Revelation. It's X, white, blue, blue. It's an instant, and it says you gain X life and draw X cards.
This card is ridiculous.
The card that is printed, that essentially has Sphinx of his Revelation printed on it, is Azor the Lawbringer. 2 white, white, blue, blue for a 6/6 legendary creature Sphinx with flying. When Azor the Lawbringer enters the battlefield, each opponent can't cast instant or sorcery spells during that player's next turn. So you basically can't get rid of it unless you are using some sort of creature-based removal. And whenever Azor attacks, you may pay Sphinx's Revelation cost, and then if you do, you gain X life and draw X cards. So I really like Azor. It's also a win condition because sometimes just hitting someone in the air for six is amazing, and then you're able to also refill your grip and refill your life as a result. I think in a deck like this, life gain is actually pretty important because people will be trying to target you, and the most common way to kill someone in Magic is by just taking their life total from 40 to 0. So both these cards, incidentally, very powerful, and they help you establish your grip as well as potentially set up a win condition.
Yeah, Sphinx's Revelation, just a really good card. And then the last card on this list of sort of refilling your hand is Tolaria West. This card we probably haven't talked about enough. It's a land.
Yeah.
It comes into play tapped. It can tap for blue mana. But the important thing is it has Transmute. So for one blue-blue, you discard this card and then search your library for a card with converted mana cost zero and then reveal it and put it into your hand and then shuffle your library. And you can play this only as a sorcery. So Transmute is on a lot of cards, and this one is just a land that has it, which means it fills a land slot in your deck, and it's also like a tutor for zero mana costed things, which are like lands or mana crypts.
Or counter spells like Pact of Negation.
Yep.
So being able to say, okay, this is white and blue, right? You're not, you have access to some tutors, but Tolaria West also lets you get things that you may not be able to search out, or it just gives you another option. Sometimes you play it as a land, other times you'll grab something you really need.
It's actually really great just to get Mana Crypt because it's three mana to get, you know, basically a Soul Ring. It makes it kind of cost one mana to do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, yeah. Okay, so now that you've gotten the grip, it's time to begin the nuclear countdown / establish your win conditions. And there are a few cards. This sort of blends in with the next category, which is Raise the Hammer before you bring it down. And the first card on this list is Blatant Thievery. So four blue sorcery for each opponent. Gain control of target permanent that player controls.
Target permanent.
Yeah, seven mana, you can just steal three things on the table if you're playing with four players. It's pretty good. You can get any permanent you want. Usually the things that are stopping you or the thing that's like, this is my trump card against your deck. Be like, it's mine now.
I was playing the other day and someone Blatant Thievery my Homeward Path.
Oh. And they also got two other sweet things out of the deal.
I was just like, because I had just used it the turn before.
Oh, wow.
And then, yeah.
Oh, wow.
That was
wow,
a good
wow.
one. I thought the irony level of that play was
that
very
is
high.
Actually amazing.
Yeah. Luminarch Ascension is the next one. Here's a game winner. It's one and a white for an enchantment. At the beginning of each opponent's end step, if you did not lose life this turn, you put a quest counter on Luminarch Ascension. And then you pay one and a white, and you create a 4/4 white angel creature token with flying. You can activate this ability only if this Luminarch Ascension has four or more quest counters on it. So this can tick up to three with one rotation of the table, and then after it gets to four quest counters on it, it's two mana for a 4/4 flyer.
Yeah, instant speed.
Instant speed, and it doesn't, like, you
stop.
Can... Yeah, if I have eight mana, I get four angels. Like, it's this card is crazy, crazy powerful, especially in Stasis-type... Staxy, Frozen Ether decks where it's like your opponent sees it, but you're slowing down their ability to like do stuff in time. Like everything they're doing takes an extra turn to happen. Luminarch Ascension is so much better.
And it also forces their hand to be like, well, we have to start attacking you now. And if they do, then let's say, sure, I'll take damage because you have to pay for propaganda. You're slowing them down
even
further.
More.
Yeah. So it just creates another threat that if you don't deal with it, it will help this player win the game.
This next card's funny.
This next card is why I made the deck the way I did. It's Azor's Elocutors. Three blue-blue, or three hybrid, and then two Azorius hybrids, so three white-blue or white-blue. Creature human advisor for 3/5. At the beginning of your upkeep, put a filibuster counter on Azor's Elocutors. Then if Azor's Elocutors has five or more filibuster counters on it, you win the game! However, whenever a source deals damage to you, remove a filibuster counter from Azor's Elocutors. So it's like Luminarch Ascension in a way where you're trying to not take damage, and you have to go five upkeeps without taking any damage. But in a deck like this, I thought, you know what? May as well put in a very silly and hard to achieve win condition because, hey, it's fun and it's also on theme with Lavinia and Azorius.
Yep. I don't usually like alternate win conditions, but that would be a funny one.
Yeah.
Okay. Next category.
Raise the Hammer. So now that you have the things here, the nuclear countdown has begun, you need to tell everyone that the countdown is literally ticking down right now.
This is lowering the hammer almost, man.
Yeah, I know. That, I was going to say the raise the hammer, lower the hammer, they all kind of blend together because they sort of all fill each category.
So there's Time Warp and Time Stretch. Time Warp is three blue-blue for Target player gets one extra turn. Time stretch is 8 blue-blue, so double time warp, basically, for a target player gets 2 extra turns.
Mm-hmm.
These are very, very powerful cards. Time stretch, I don't think I've ever seen it cast where the player didn't win the game.
Yeah, 2 extra turns is very powerful.
At a point in the game when you've got a bajillion mana, you have at least 10 mana. Yeah, and then the other card that I've never really seen cast except for one time where the player didn't win is Expropriate.
Yep.
7 blue-blue, everybody votes either time or money. If they vote time, then you get an extra turn. Money, you get one of their permanents. You always vote time for yourself, so you always get one extra turn with the coolest stuff that you steal from them.
Yeah.
It's blatant thievery plus an extra turn if your opponents do it right, and sometimes they do it wrong, and it's blatant thievery plus 2 extra turns or something.
Yeah. And you know, you say these cards are lowering the hammer, but the thing is, you get the turns, you still have to do something with them. So I think that's why I include them in the raise the hammer.
Fair enough.
The last one.
Oh boy.
It's Planar Bridge. It's Paradox Engine good. It's a 6 mana legendary artifact. You can pay 8 and tap it to search your library for a permanent card, put it onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library. So 8 mana to find any card out of your deck.
Any
except
permanent.
For sorceries and instants, yeah. But yeah, you could grab a Planeswalker. You can basically just establish a way to win the game through Planar Bridge pretty quickly. And finally, the way that you really end out the game and you bring it all down. I'm sorry, Josh. I brought these cards to game nights. Armageddon. What are you going to do in your extra 2 turns? Well, how about play the biggest thing you have, float a bunch of mana, and then destroy all lands for 3 and a white?
Yeah.
Not much your opponents are going to do. Even if they do get turns after your 2 extra turns or whatever it is, they are not in a good spot.
Catastrophe is 4 white-white. Destroy all lands or all creatures. Creatures destroyed this way cannot be regenerated.
So this one's a little nicer. Sometimes you're just doing a board wipe.
True. True.
But at least it gives you the option. And then finally, Rest in Peace was more of a meta call where it's 1 in a white. When it enters the battlefield, exile all cards from all graveyards. And if a card or token we put into a graveyard from anywhere, exile instead. I think that's the one thing I was worried about. It's like, what if someone does something with their graveyard but not their battlefield and they have ways to recur that? So Rest in Peace is just sort of another one of the nail on the coffin effects.
Rest in Peace is a card that will just turn off a lot of decks.
Yeah.
A lot of decks. It's sort of Blood Moon to the graveyard recursion decks, so the Marins, the Caradors, the
right.
Tons of decks are just playing around with their graveyards. It's amazing how Rest in Peace just kind of shuts off a lot of that stuff. So
yeah,
very powerful card.
So that's basically the game plan of the deck, which is set it up, be safe, get a grip, and then tell everyone it's about to happen pretty much, and then make it happen. The last category I put in here, I don't know if you read this yesterday.
It's the JLK special.
It's called the JLK special. So there was a lot of pressure on me coming back. They were like, Jimmy, you got to make sure you win game nights. Josh is winning too much. I was like, all right, whatever. We just play. I don't really know what's going to happen. But I knew what everyone was playing before because we all choose our commanders. And I was like, well, you know, these are cards I was looking at in general, but I will definitely include them because I think they're particularly good against the commander that Josh played. So it was a bit of a meta call. I didn't know the contents of his deck, but I did know that I wanted to play these cards. And the first one is Imperial Mask. I actually like this card a lot, to be honest.
I didn't know you were gunning for me so hard.
I wasn't gunning for you. It was more just like, I don't want to get gunned down by you.
By the way, Rest in Peace is very good against the Judith deck as well.
Yeah. I think
Reassembling Skeleton doesn't get to come back if it never hits the graveyard.
Yeah, that's a good point. So it was actually interesting because my thought about it was, well, you know what? Josh's commander can do a lot of ping damage and stuff, and I can find ways to get around that. I can get rid of key cards. But the thing that I can't stop is infinite.
Right.
And once that gets going, like, because I'm like, okay, I'll counter one thing. It's like, well, I'll just do an infinite triggers on top of that.
Right.
So that was the sort of thing that I was worried most about. So Imperial Mask is 4 and a white for an enchantment. When Imperial Mask comes into play, if it's not a token, each of your teammates puts a token into play that's a copy of Imperial Mask. So teammates doesn't really matter here, but you can't be the target of spells or abilities your opponents control.
Yep. Gives so Judith you can't like touch you anymore.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And same with Prov, Spires of Order. Actually, this is a flavor call because this is where the Senate for Azorius resides.
Nice.
So you just also happen to work. But it's a land that taps to add one to my mana pool, and for 4, a white and a blue, I can tap it to prevent all damage a source of my choice would deal this turn. So that kind of gets rid of...
Less good against infinite because they can just continue over the top of the trigger
right.
Generally.
You would try and maybe do it on their upkeep before they can like maybe play a spell or get the combo going because they need it to be their main phase.
Right. The Imperial Mask is particularly good against Judith because black red, very bad at dealing with enchantments.
Yeah, and I don't have that many creatures in the deck. The main thing that I would die to would be like, all right, Jamie, I'm going to take you from 40 to 0, like that.
Right.
And finally, Fumigate, 3 white-white, destroy all creatures. You gain 1 life for each creature destroyed this way. I just thought the incidental life gain would be good, not just against your deck, but also the creature-based deck we were playing and the other ones on the table.
Well, like you said, you don't have many creatures, so just destroying all creatures, and you might as well gain life.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the deck that Jimmy brought
yes.
to game nights. Again, January 25th, you heard my deck tech last week. This is Jimmy's. I believe that DJ is going to do a deck tech of his Taysa deck on his channel, so
An
eye out for that. Vinny, unfortunately, probably we won't have time to bring his in. So you'll know 3 of the 4 decks going into that game nights episode. It'll be interesting to hear in the comments, you know, based on hearing my deck, Jimmy's deck, if DJ's comes out, just who you think is going to win, how you think this the game's gonna go.
Yeah,
obviously Magic is a game that's hard to predict in a lot of ways. You can't always just look at the list, but it is fun to sort of, you know, theory craft beforehand and try mm-hmm. and figure out how you think things are gonna go. So we'd love to hear your predictions for how the game's gonna go. Now we're gonna talk about other ways that you thought about building the deck. I don't want people to get confused as
right. Good
this
call.
Is not like actually how we built it. It's just other ways he thinks you could or maybe you thought about doing.
Yeah, because partway through making this deck, I was like, man, this is getting brutal. Originally had a lot more stasis elements in there, had back to basics in there. But I was like, everyone's playing two colors. It's
yeah,
fine.
Back to basics probably wouldn't have been that bad in that yeah. in that particular meta.
But I started taking some of those cards out and sort of added a couple of more things I thought were more flavorful or might be a little more fun or interesting to try out, sort of in, like Josh said, with the flex slots that you often have in your decks. And more recently, I had more time because I had a smaller amount of time to craft the deck right before game nights were recorded. But afterwards, I had more time to think about the deck, think about the flavor and all that stuff. And I thought there's 2 different ways that you could take the deck. One to make it more interactive and one to make it more Vorthosy and in line with the story. So for the first beginning, let's talk about a way to make this deck more interactive. And this sort of plays on the ideas of you are the Azorius Guild, you're political, you want people to make choices and have an, you know, sort of a fair vote. And in that case, you're including cards like Council's Judgment. So it's a Will of the Council card, 1 white, white. Basically, everyone starts voting on something to exile. And if it's tied, you actually do more than one thing. And I like that a lot because it gives other players a chance to make a choice. Mm-hmm. And often in these stasis decks, you're denying people that ability to make choices or even play spells. And in that same line, Conspiracy has been great at doing this. There are the Will of the Council cards like Council's Judgment, Council's Dilemma, like we just saw with Expropriate, Parlay,
oh, yeah.
which is where everyone flips like the top card of their deck. Join Forces is also something from Commander in the past where you and an opponent get to choose to sort of help each other out or make things together. So that I thought you could include a lot of those cards if you want to make things a little more quote-unquote fair. Doesn't necessarily make it that much less powerful. There's also cards that like Shared Fate. And this is a card from Mirrodin. And it's 4 in the blue for an enchantment. If a player would draw a card, that player exiles the top card of one of their opponent's libraries face down instead. And each player may look at and play cards that you exiled with Shared Fate. So this is weird. It's very bizarre. The 5-color player is going to like this the most, but I like this because it's like, you know what? We're all in it together.
Oh, right, because it doesn't say you can spend mana as though it were mana of any
right.
color, so you have to actually cast the spell for its exact mana cost.
But it literally stops everyone on their game plan
yeah.
because they can no longer draw cards from their deck. It's any time a player would draw a card, so it's really interesting.
You're just hoping when people flip your cards, they can't play them so you can play them
yeah.
later, basically. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, I don't know if you actually can play them. I just think it's funny that now that, you know, like if we're really going to be in the Senate together, sort of that flavor, or we're all making political decisions together, well, we may as well be doing it for each other's decks too. Factor Fiction is also just a great card draw card in general, but 3 in the blue instant, reveal the top 5 cards of your library, and the opponent separates those cards into 2 piles, put one into your hand and the other into your graveyard. I've seen
super
so many times
card.
Where
super
it's just like, he's going off, Factor Fiction. 2 piles, 1 with 5 cards, 1 with 0
yeah.
cards.
You can have them all. Stop him.
Yeah, stop him. Do whatever you can. I think that's obviously not the right choice, even if someone is going off, but that's how it goes. Fight or Flight. This one's also one of the let's have everyone make choices cards.
It's 3 and a white for an enchantment. At the beginning of combat on each opponent's turn, separate all creatures that player controls into 2 piles. Only creatures in the pile of their choice can attack this turn. So you basically make it so they can attack with only half their stuff.
Yeah. I think these cards are not necessarily that powerful at their face value, but it does create for a lot of fun discussion around the table. Because anytime Factor Fiction and those sort of cards come up, I'm always looking around being like, all right,
what do we do here?
What are we doing? Yeah, it's not just me making the choice. And the next card is Chain of Vapor. It's blue for an instant, return target non-land permanent to its owner's hand. Then that permanent's controller may sacrifice a land. If the player does, they may copy this spell and choose a new target for the copy.
And then the next player
can sack a land,
and so you can just chain.
By the way, in a stasis deck, what do you want your opponents to do?
Right.
Yeah, get rid of their lands.
Yeah, and they're not going to have a lot to be able to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, but it could, you know, go off in a way that's like, oh, sweet, we need to get rid of a lot of different things on the table. This is a great way to do it because it's just non-land permanents.
And the last one on the list is Manifold Insights. Two and a blue for a sorcery. Reveal the top 10 cards of your library. Starting with the next opponent in turn order, each opponent chooses a different non-land card from among them. Put the chosen cards into your hand and the rest on the bottom of your library in any order. So ostensibly, you get the worst three cards, good at math, Josh, out of your top 10 cards. But like you said, there's often instances where it behooves your opponent to give you specific things because there are answers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, we need a board wipe. Okay, one of you can give me a board wipe out of my top 10 cards.
Also, what if all of your cards, non-land cards, are good?
Yeah, hopefully they are if you built your deck right. You're going to get three cards.
Yes, I think three man to draw three cards is still pretty good. And like sometimes you're able to hit more stuff, which is, I think, in general good. And this deck doesn't run too much in terms of mana rocks and stuff, so like duds. So I think Manifold Insights is a way to make at least it feel a little more fair, like other players have more control in the game.
You can also, knowing you have this card, you can make deals like, hey, I'll do this for you, but you owe me a favor.
Right, and then when
you play this, you go, remember that favor you owe me? I want that card.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a way to make the deck a little more interactive. I think that's one of the easiest ways to get rid of the, oh my gosh, you're not letting us do anything part of the deck. The complaint that I think often comes up with Stasis is giving players chances to do more stuff. And
I mean, if you're still playing Stasis and you play all these cards, I don't think it matters.
That's true. But it's a way to lessen the intensity, I think, of the deck. And maybe make it a little more fun, especially if your playgroup is one that is really communicative and likes to talk a lot about these sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
And the other way to change the deck is Vorthos. And this is something that we rarely talk about on the show, but I decided to do a little deep dive into what's happening on Ravnica because we've been to this plane 3-4 times now. I don't even know how many. So it's story time, everybody, on the Command Zone.
Okay, good, because I have no idea what's going on with the story.
All right. So, Josh, you have a long day tomorrow, so we got to get you to sleep early. After this, you're going to go to bed, okay? Nap.
Oh, this is my bedtime
story? Yeah, it's a bedtime story.
Okay.
So Mark Rosewater has written a bunch of articles on what they wanted to do with the new Ravnica set. And the biggest thing is that they wanted to find a place that they could do film noir, which I thought was really interesting. And they said they wanted a set that's occurring in darkness with shadows and moodiness. And five of the guilds of Ravnica have fallen to Bolas's influence now in the story, and those are all the guilds with planeswalkers as representatives. So for Azorius, it's Dovin Bahn. Now, originally, Ravnica had Detain and Forecast. Forecast is not really something you play in EDH, but Detain can be. Lavinia is a pretty good
the
card.
Original, yeah, Lavinia from Return of Ravnica is good in a blink deck.
Yeah, and the Azorius, as they're described in the story, are very protocol-driven, they're bureaucratic, they like to enforce the law, and they're very formalistic. So that sort of matches along with what the deck already is trying to do. So originally, they had their own guild pact, which was just like a written document, and that didn't really end up working out. So Jace comes to the plane and eventually becomes the living version of the guild pact. So he's the one to establish order between all 10 of the guilds here, because originally I think there was the Planeswalker Wars on Ravnica, and when they left, there's just a bunch of creatures of all different types scattered around, and they needed to find a way to unite them all together. And that's what Azor the Lawbringer did. Now, when Jace left to do Gatewatch stuff, the balance became very tenuous, and Esperia got killed by Vraska. And I didn't realize this, but the card Assassin's Trophy is Esperia's like petrified face. And Vraska, and the Vraska is this, the flavor text of that too. And Vraska, if you guys are keeping up with the story, has been mind wiped by Jace from their encounters on Ixalan to become an undercover agent for him, essentially, and to convince Bolas that she's still on his side, but Jace will turn her at a crucial moment. So I'm guessing
she's like his sleeper cell.
Yeah. So I'm guessing that's actually going to happen by the end of these three Ravnica sets.
Right.
Dovin Bahn, who you guys remember back from Kaladesh, was running the Inventor's Fair. I think he was running it. He wanted to find out who made the planar bridge. It wasn't Tezzeret like he thought. It turns out, I think it is Nicol Bolas. So he ends up coming to Ravnica because Bolas is here trying to turn the guilds in his favor. And of course, He's weak-minded enough to be corrupted by Bolas.
You got to be pretty strong-minded not to be corrupted by Bolas.
He's pretty much defeated every single member of the Gatewatch and turned so many people to his side.
He read a lot of books, is why.
Yeah.
Remember that original art?
Nicol Booklaus.
Perfect. It was awesome. That joke just totally worked.
Oh, boy. Anyway, more like a book win. So Dovin Bond, Nicol Booklaus was like, yo, Dovin, you like order and structure, right? Well, guess what? I will give you a chance to improve and fix the guild system to your liking because you think it's in disarray. And that's like Dovin Bond's, like, that's his thing. And so what he did is he started exploiting loopholes in the law in Ravnica, and he eventually, in the chaos and disruption, like, had some sort of stuff happen, and he became the guildmaster.
Okay. That's why Lavinia's not anymore?
Yes, and that I believe, now as of the time of recording this podcast, we don't know why Lavinia is in Azorius Renegade, but her flavor text does hint, I told Jace that Ravnica would fall apart if he didn't take his responsibility seriously, I didn't want to be right. So Ravnica is in the status of falling apart. Jace didn't take his responsibility seriously enough because he's always planeswalking out to do Gatewatch stuff. As a result, it appears that Lavinia is on the run while the new order has been established with Dovin Bond at the top of it. And Dovin, actually, I like this part a lot. He started teaching the Azorius Guild how to make spythopters and use precognition to arrest people before they committed the crime.
Oh, it's Minority Report.
It's Minority Report, yeah. So a Vorthos build for me, I think, if you wanted to take this in the Vorthos direction, would tell the history of the Azorius on Ravnica, from Azor the Lawbringer creating the Guild Pact, all the way to how they started to fall into a darker influence in the next sets. So obviously, Vorthos cards you can add. Azor the Lawbringer is already in there. But, you know, he's sort of the one that created this all and bound everyone together and made the 10 guilds and gave them their roles. Grand Arbiter Augustin took over the guild pack in the moment of crisis, also in the deck already. And here's one we're starting to add more stuff. So Jace Beleriand / Jace, the living guild pact. That's pretty much a key element of the story. And plus, if you're starting to put some of these bigger, crazier creatures in there, Jace the living guild pact is a great way to essentially get those guys out with its ultimate.
Mm-hmm.
Hesperia, Supreme Judge, was the guildmaster of Azorius after Jace was peacing out. Supreme Verdict is actually something that the Azorius guy said that he was going to do if something didn't happen. I didn't really read too deep on this. But it's also a great board wipe. So these are all powerful cards on their own, but they all fit within the theme. Lavinia of the Tenth was the Bailiff, and she's actually a card that has seen a lot of play in decks that can flicker her.
Yep.
I think that's a mechanic you could add in here, being like, I will continually enforce the law, and then when Jace dies, maybe you're like, I can't do it anymore. The new Dovin Bond, if there is going to be one, I believe there should be.
It's been revealed.
You're
good.
Thank goodness. The new Dovin Bond.
He's like, what can I talk about?
Talk about?
It's out there.
And to fit with the Dovin Bond theme, we have.
What are we talking about? The way we're recording these podcasts is because we've got scheduling things is a little bit ahead of time.
Right.
But the entire set has been spoiled for like a week and a half now for them.
Whew, okay. Great. Oh, that's right. Ugh.
But the entire story, not necessarily.
Yeah, yeah. And we don't know about the story either. A lot of these elements were taken from flavor text, actually.
They don't give us all the story. They just let us see the cards a little early.
But hey, if you guys like this Vorthos segment, maybe they could. Because I actually held off on reading about the history. And because Dovin has started to teach these guys how to do more insidious things, you can have the Thopter Spy Network, is a really fun card in there, as well as Telepathy. Get to see what's in everyone's hand.
Oh, that's very... Minority Report.
Yeah. And of course, there is a whole wiki on the list of the secondary characters of Ravnica and the cards that are associated with them. So if you really wanted to get into the full Vorthosy nature of this, just check out that list and you can see all the cards. We're going to include the link in the show notes below. And of course,
I like this next part.
Yeah.
What to remove from the deck to make room for all this Vorthos stuff.
And it's basically
the mean things,
mass land destruction, stacks elements, extra turns, counterspells. Unless you think that they really fit, or you could choose, you know, there are more Azorius blue-white counterspells. Again, there's one in this set as well. So you could put those in instead of, like, Pact of Negation. So that's sort of how I would do this deck if you didn't want to just be a pure stasis stacks, make everyone not like you. And kind of like what we saw with our Mizzic decks, not be able to play the deck very often.
Yeah, true.
Or at all. Just because you know what it's going to do and you've seen the reactions and it's not... something that you necessarily want as a commander player.
Well, and I would just say, if you have a stacksy mass land destruction type of deck, you probably shouldn't play it a lot because that's going to cause ire.
Yeah.
Your play group will probably deal with, like, once in a while the deck gets pulled out and they're like, okay, let's slog through this and let's all team up and try and get that person. But if it's just like game after game, they're going to start to hate it.
Yeah.
So it's the type of deck that can be very powerful and fun for you, and that's great. Just don't overdo it is all I would say. Like, as far as the amount of times you play it. I like that Precognition Minority Report thing. I wonder what a deck that's just leans into that really hard. It's like the Azorius right now.
Yeah.
That has like Ponder, Preordain. Like, you find every card that has like that idea of like precognition.
Knowing what's going to happen.
Yeah, Telepathy is a really good one. Soothsaying. There's like a bunch of stuff that's like, I'm going to look into the future somehow. That would be a fun deck to build.
Dig Through Time is literally that.
Yep. So,
play some Ugin. That guy travels through time.
All right. So, to the listeners, what do you think of the Lavinia deck? What would you play? What style would you play it with? Would you try something different altogether? And also, based on how Jimmy built his deck for game nights, how do you think it's going to do? You know Judith now. You know Lavinia. You can kind of imagine what the Nikia and the Taysa decks are going to be like, I think. And if not, maybe DJ's video about his Taysa deck will be out by now. If not, look for it soon. But we'd like to hear your predictions of you know, who's going to win this, you know, who's going to take down this next upcoming game nights again on January 25th.
Yeah. And if you are interested in building this deck yourself, now's the time to order cards from cardkingdom.com using our affiliate link. All you have to do is add /commandzone to the end of it. And that's it. It takes nothing off of your plate, but it helps us make this show. It helps, you know, basically make sure we keep the lights on up here. And you get some sweet cards from a great company.
Yep. And they have great customer service. You got peace of mind that like your stuff's going to come fast. It's going to be in good condition.
Yeah.
Cardkingdom.com/commandzone.
With great customer service.
And then the other thing, the other sponsor we have for the show is Ultra Pro. They make all the cool themed products that protect your cards or make your battlefield look cool. They have awesome gravity dice. They have the Azorius, Gruul, Rakdos, Orzhov, Simic sleeves from Ravnica Allegiance. They also have all the theme sleeves that are from Guilds of Ravnica. So if you're building a Boros deck, I don't know why you would, but if you were, then you can find those sleeves as well. They have the deck boxes, also guild themed. They have the playmats. Really, if you want to make your battlefield look sweet, Ultra Pro has got you covered.
And not just this set, but sets in the future as well.
All right. Now it's time for the end step, where we talk about something cool outside the world of Magic. Have you seen either of these?
No, but I'm very interested in the last one because that's a word that I don't think we've ever said in the podcast before.
Okay, so there's a movie and it's called On the Basis of Sex.
What?
Yeah, it's not actually racy in any way as far as the movie itself. It's about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who is the famous United States Supreme Court Justice. I think she was the second woman ever on this, you know, that was elected to the bench.
Wishing her a speedy recovery.
Yeah, she recently, I think it was her hip or something. She's like 86, 85
now. I think it was actually
now. Lung
cancer elements.
Well, no, they found the lung cancer because she had fallen and broken her hip. So like falling and breaking, I don't know if it was her hip, whatever bone it was, was like a good thing because it caused her to undergo a bunch of diagnosis where they found, I think she's battled cancer a couple of times now. She's quite the lady.
Yeah, she has quite the history.
And this is a movie that's just about her in the legal system, fighting to gain equality for women legally.
So that's on the basis of sex.
So the title is basically about the U.S. government being discriminatory in laws on the basis of gender.
Got you.
And it was starring what's the lady from Rogue One who was also in the Stephen Hawking movie? Felicity Jones.
Oh, Felicity, yes.
Who's a very good actress. Armie Hammer's also in it.
I like Armie a lot.
Yeah, there's a bunch of the acting is very good. And I don't know, you know, RBG, as she is called, is a polarizing figure. And I know we're going to get emails. We always do if we talk about anything. You know, this is a movie, right? Like, I'm not saying that I'm making no value judgments or whatever, but she is a very important person in the world, really, in what she did for the fight to sort of gain equality for not just women, but just people of all kinds of diversities. Mm-hmm. And so it's really interesting how she went about legally attacking the laws and going into the courts and forming the arguments that would legally set up the world, the modern world we have today. Yeah,
she
was a little bit like RGB, the United States Renegade little bit. Anyway, so I like movies like that. I think it's well known that I like history and things related to history and what we can learn from history or just people we can admire from the past who, you know, fought the good fight. And regardless of whether you agree with it, just did it in a really admirable way. So yeah. I don't know. I liked it. I didn't think the movie was like the most amazing movie, but from a standpoint of like telling a part of a story that I didn't really know a ton about, like obviously know a little bit about her because she's currently on the Supreme Court, but like, you know, I didn't know exactly, you know, every little thing about her life. So,
I mean, I think stuff that is like, I love Lincoln. Obviously, yep. It brought a whole new flavor to that story, which I only kind of knew when I realized when I saw it. But the part that fascinated me about it was how he was able to deal with the legal system and right. The court system and the House and the Senate and all that to get to the goals that he set out to accomplish, which I think is something that we can all draw inspiration from in terms of you have a goal. How are you going to set out and get that goal and accomplish it against overwhelming odds sometimes?
Yeah, I think we live in this time right now, and it's unfortunate where like, again, I know we're going to get emails because there's certain positions that Bader Ginsburg has taken that people really don't like.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have to endorse just by saying like, hey, I like this movie with this person and I admire certain aspects about her, doesn't mean that you endorse everything that person's ever done in their entire life.
Right.
So, you know, I'm just saying just stop typing those emails right now because for one, you're not going to change anybody's mind. And for two, like, you know.
Arguing on the internet.
Yeah,
who does
exactly.
That?
Exactly. Okay. All right.
All right.
So moving that's my message.
I liked it. I thought that was a very wholesome, nice message. I'm trying to think of something to say that's extremely divisive.
Well, there's these two guys, and they talk about a format really, who plays this format? Like, Why aren't they just talking about Commander all the time? Because Commander's clearly the best format.
Clearly the best.
How dare we would speak about a podcast that's our sister podcast that happens to cover another format called Modern? Seriously.
You know, maybe it's like a close, like, I would say close second, except there's so many things that are better than it. It's like a close eighth.
Well, yeah, it's a close eighth. It's a photo finish for eighth place. We're being facetious. We're talking about our good friends, Alex Kessler and Ben Bateman. They host a really, really great podcast called The Masters of Modern. The modern format is super complicated, and as the years have gone by, because these guys have been doing it for like 4+ years mm-hmm. now, the modern format's almost like twice as big as it was when they first started. And keeping track of like everything that's going on and then new sets come out and how that impacts this huge card pool that they've got and all the established decks in modern, like it's hard for a person to keep tabs on. And Alex and Ben can really help guide you through that whole thing. So as new sets come out, like Ravnica Allegiance, if you want to know what cards are going to be played in modern and which decks and which new decks maybe are more viable now because they got a vital piece that they didn't have before, Alex and Ben are the guys that you really want to check out. So just go onto YouTube, type in The Masters of Modern. You'll find them that way. They do have video. Or you find them on iTunes, Stitcher, right next to us at collected.company. You can also follow them on Twitter at the MMcast.
I saw a Modern GP on Twitch the other day, and Clark Clan Ironworks. Ooh. That card. The reason I like watching Modern is because it does require a very high skill level to play these decks. And I think it was Ben Stark that said, I'm playing this deck because I think it's the most powerful. Even if I'm playing it 85 to 90% optimally, I'm learning new things about the deck as I go. I still think it's just that good that you should be able to beat the rest of the field. And you top 8ed that GP, I think.
So. I would say, too, that like if you watch a standard Pro Tour, there's very little that's going to happen, like interactions between cards that you can take into Commander and is useful.
Right.
Modern has combos where you're like,
constantly.
Oh, KCI combo, that works in Commander and is very powerful, like those types of things. So you can also learn a lot that you move into Modern. So listening to Alex and Ben, the Masters of Modern, can give you ideas that you can use in Commander.
Absolutely. And our editor for the show is
Murph.
Josh Murphy. Special thanks to him for doing the editing.
I'm sorry, Murph, if you don't like us saying that your name that way.
Well, he's
but
in the other
stop.
Room. I bet he hears us going, Murph.
And his eyeballs are rolling.
Murph, you have to look up the Earth sound. URFF, I think is what it is from League of Legends. It's a manatee that yells it. So
so it's not you.
It's not you. It's a manatee. But boy, it's a great fun game mode. Thank you, Murph. And as well, special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer, who make the cool living card animations. As well as the ones that start and end the show with that awesome soul ring.
All right, everybody. Thanks for watching.
We'll see you next time.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com. Or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.